Welcome to the Phoenix Unlimited Podcast.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to a new episode of the Phoenix MMA podcast. It's Saturday night, about 9 o'clock, and me and Holland are going to do another episode for everybody, and hope you enjoy this one. Here, stay down here. Stay down here. So, that will be the co-star. Holland is helping out, so you might hear her join in. So, 9 o'clock, we're about to watch the UFC. Here, one second. Here, take a seat. All right, just going to sit in my lap while we do it. Okay. All right, so 9 o'clock, Saturday, about to do watch the UFC and take notes on that UFC because I want to start doing podcast episodes after big UFCs like Good Fights, and so break them down. So we're going to watch the UFC, take notes on the fights tonight, and especially the main event. You got middleweight and heavyweight and light heavyweight fighting against each other. So, two division, always like uniting two belts is a really cool marquee fight. So, gonna watch that, and then I'll take notes and get breakdown on that. First thing, just quick announcements. We are busy. If people haven't noticed, if you've been to the gym, you've seen how busy we are. We have a lot of new students, and we have a lot of competitions that are coming up consistently. So this coming up Friday, today's Saturday, this Friday, Holland, if you can hear the breathing, it's sucking out a bottle right now. So Friday, we have the Primal Combat MMA fights in Lebanon, Tennessee. We have Justin, Trey, and Xavier that are fighting on Friday, and then Saturday we have the grappling games. It's at the same venue, I believe, and that's the grappling games. So that'll be a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu tournament. So we have MMA fights Friday, kickboxing. We have MMA fight, two kickboxing bouts on Friday, and then Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu tournament on Saturday, and then March 27th, going to Orlando for the IBJJF Orlando Open. Then we have people going to the Houston Open the following month, and we also have MMA fights and kickboxing bouts. So it is busy, and if you've been to the gym, you've seen practice has been pretty busy, classes have been pretty busy, so good stuff. Starting 2021, awesome. So this episode is going to be, let's see if we can do something just real quick. This episode is going to be my take on Andre Goval and Gordon Ryan scenario that's been playing out over the last week. I'll give you my take, hopefully you find it interesting or, entertaining. And this will actually be a fun one to do. All right, let's get into it. I always have to take notes, if not I'll rant, and try to keep it just for under an hour. And this is just, as the head coach of Phoenix MMA, this is just one coach's opinion and one athlete, former MMA fighter's opinion, and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt, all that good stuff. Just my opinion from my experience. Usually don't like to talk about the drama, social media beefs. I will talk about it in some contexts. There are some things that are interesting. Even the Ben Askren, Jake Paul, what's going on right now is also interesting. Might break that one down. But I definitely look for different things than I'd say the normal person looks for, or what they are putting out. There's a YouTube channel that I like, Alpaca Thesaurus. It's a really weird name, but the guy breaks down just like alpaca character, like an anonymous character, but as the narrator, but breaks down fighter weigh-ins and stare downs and things, and looks for physical, psychological signs, so stuff like that's interesting. So I kind of look through things. I'll probably end up doing a Ben Askren, Jake Paul take on it, and usually don't like to talk on the drama, but I think there's something that's There's some lessons to be learned, and there's some factors that are worth discussing that are just interesting on the scenario that's going on. Because I've experienced some of the stuff myself before, and maybe it helps out. Because in your future, this happens in the fight game every once in a while. It happens in martial arts. One of the oldest things ever. The Gracies used to storm and go to Taekwondo and karate gyms and challenge, and they had the Gracie Challenge in the 90s where they put an ad out. They put an ad out in the entire city, like $1 million if you can come beat us in a fight. So that was before the UFC, and I don't even know if they had $1 million to actually pay out or not, or if it was just like a bluff and they would just, and so they created the Gracie. If you see the old school Gracies in action tapes, that's them. That was before the UFC and around the same time, and they were as the first UFC, and they were just promoting, showing the effectiveness of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. But they didn't have the UFC yet, so there wasn't an outlet for it. There wasn't a way to show. Everybody thought Kung Fu was like the most effective martial art at that time. So there is a history of this, so there will probably be a future of it, and it's just how humans are when drama and physical fights. It'd be nice if there were never street fights or fights at bars or clubs or baseball games or wherever. It'd be nice if there wasn't, but it's an ugly part of human nature, and it happens sometimes. So that's what we're going to discuss and see if we can learn some stuff from it. And it'll also be some interesting jiu-jitsu, I guess, pop culture stuff that's going on. And a good lens to see it through. So let's see. This might be like the closest. I'll take that back. I was going to say it's the closest thing to politics in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, but it's really not. It's there's tons of politics when it comes to different teams and ref and matches and decisions, ref decisions. There is quite a bit of politics in different ways of Jiu-Jitsu. This is, I guess, closer to the pop culture, but there's some... I think there's some mindset lessons still to get through it. If somebody, what we're going to be talking about is Gordon Ryan slapping Andre Galval. And I say slapping, but it was a good slap. Go watch the video. It's everywhere on social media. It's not just like a slap, like coming from a guy Gordon's size. It's kind of like a palm strike, like a right hook. Or if you've ever seen those slap competitions, they knock out people. Plenty of people get knocked out in those slap competitions where they're just basically throwing right hooks or left hook is just a palm strikes open and pancreas, you would have palm strikes. Palm strikes sometimes are actually a smart thing to do to throw. You are in a street fight situation and you need to be able to use your fingers. Palm strikes are smart because you can break your fingers and your knuckles and not be able to manipulate things like tools that you need to, door handles, firearms, knives, whatever, if you're in a life and death situation. So sometimes palm strikes are actually smart. And being in a combat jiu-jitsu tournament, I'll tell you right now, like if you land with the base of your palm, you can do a really good amount of damage. And if you get... I said, watch the palm, the little palm, or the slap contest. There's plenty of people that get knocked out. And if they don't get knocked out, they get rocked pretty well with them. So that's what we'll be talking about is Gordon Ryan slapping Andre, two times, pretty hard slaps, or they are hard slaps, twice. Andre's reaction, from Andre's, his statement that he put out Friday, the social media silence. Gordon's continued things, Tom DeBlass's opinion, and my opinion. Hopefully you find this one entertaining. This one worth listening to. If you're into jiu-jitsu, or if you're into like self-defense and self-defense, this one should be interesting for you. All right, let's see. The other thing I'll say on this is everyone has their own temperament, and so everybody has a different perspective on the world. So I'm not saying that if you see this differently that you're wrong. This is just my opinion based off of my personal experience in life growing up, professional and personal things, and everybody's biology is different. So everybody has different temperaments, but, even if your temperament isn't the exact same response as mine, I think if you're a little bit more, gasoline than I am, there's something that'll be interesting with this talk. And even if you're more, aromatherapy, when I bless you. Sorry, bless you. So when I went through the sheriff's office academy, I had two separate academies, the Tennessee State Law Enforcement Academy and then the sheriff's office as well. Sheriff's office was a shorter version, and it was done locally, not by the state. Going through that, the sheriff's academy, one of the instructors had a good saying. He said officers tend to be gasoline or aromatherapy, and he said that each one is needed depending on the scenario, and if you bring the wrong one to the wrong scenario, it doesn't work. And when it doesn't work, it usually means someone's getting hurt that doesn't need to be hurt. You, the other person, our law enforcement's a really, really, really difficult job, and things can go bad really quick. So everybody has their own temperament, just so you know. But I think either side can get something from discussing this. And this is just like my experience from my career: wrestling, boxing, MMA, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, Muay Thai, kickboxing. Being a security guard, police officer, fight promoter. I did my own MMA fight promotion. And also I was a crew of an MMA fight promotion. So I used to even do security, for MMA shows, build the rings, build the cage and octagon, set everything up. So that's how I learned how the system works. Was I was a crew member first, building the stage and cage and all that good stuff. And I was, competing in jiu-jitsu at that time. And then also learned how the ticket sales and how they run everything, the promotion and things like that. And then eventually did my own MMA promotion. So all that stuff. The whole point is I've been around combat, physical combat, a lot of my life, so that's my opinion on it. Let's see. All right. So if I pause, I apologize. I have to. Holland sometimes needs some help. She gets stuck in the couch and stuff. Okay. All right. So backstory on this. So we'll go really, really brief because this has been brewing and building for this Andre Goval and Gordon Ryan situation has been brewing for several years. I'll just do a quick scenario just so we can talk about what's going on in the present. So, we'll go over Goval's rise, to his level, to greatness, to everything. Andre Goval, obviously is Brazilian, has humble beginnings. I remember when I was, I remember in 2005, Andre Goval being on the cover of a jiu-jitsu magazine that I purchased when he was a brown belt. So he was a hot prospect as a brown belt. And I remember that was the first time I saw an Andre Goval interview. So as a brown belt, he was the cover of a magazine. So Andre was a young hot prospect who then essentially accomplished the things that were people thought he would accomplish, and then moved to the United States, started in a really small gym, really small square footage gym. The cool thing is the Atos, the original one that came that he opened. There's cool training footage early, like Keenan Cornelius, JT Torres, the Mendez brothers, before the Mendez brothers had their own gym. So they had this mega gym, like a team, Atos, that just everybody, I don't know if they all lived in the same house or not, but they just had crazy, crazy training sessions. And they have, you can look up YouTube videos, the mats like blue and gray. It's the gym doesn't completely match, and it's Atos now is awesome, really nice design, and it's a huge gym, and it's a really, really expensive gym. Everything that put the work they put into it, but the first one is just when you look at it, everything doesn't match. And Andre said in interviews that it was he just moved from Brazil to the United States, so he just kind of had to be scrappy and just do it, just take one day at a time. So I can understand that with how the way that our gym is growing and starting it from scratch, like starting from nothing, not not purchasing a gym that's already been established and been open for 5 years or something like that, but building it from the ground up, I can understand that. But Andre did. Andre went from the wonder boy to the champion to the current, you know, best of his time in his prime, to, you know, just tearing up one of the most ADCC medals, absolute medals, and just being really just rock solid, consistent, just, you know, the last 15 years, just rock solid, consistent, you know, maybe like a, maybe you could say like a Tom Brady, you know, just, but because he's in a similar age bracket. Yeah, so he's a similar age bracket, and that's how long he's been good for. And not only that, but built up a gym and a team that he also produces world champions. But with his age, he is on the end of his career. And I know football is not really a sport that you consider. You're in the prime and you're, you know, being 40, 41, 42, 43. Fighting really isn't. Reaction time slows, VO2 max slows, testosterone levels slow. I don't think the testosterone level stuff is an issue for Gordon or Andre, but still, your VO2 max, your VO2 max and your reaction time just slows with age. Just part of the game. You know, you can fight against it. I still plan on competing until, you know, until I can't walk, or till, you know, for a very long time I plan on competing. I say, you know, 20, 30 more years. And want to preserve, the goal is to preserve that VO2 max and testosterone levels and muscle mass and flexibility. That's the idea, is to age well and preserve those things. But at the same time, understand what's happening, what the life cycle is. You know, it's never cute to be a 40-year-old kid. You know, a 40-year-old thinking that they're still 21. And I'm not sorry. I'm not. That might have sounded like I was thinking Andre's thinking that way. I'm not saying Andre is. This is my personal opinion on just aging and maturing, and just maturing with it in a nice, smooth, graceful, accepting of your age. So that's where Andre is. You know, all that stuff. But he is on the tail end of his career. Gordon is in his physical prime. He still has a good amount of years left in his physical prime window. You okay? He still has a good amount of years in his physical prime, and so he still has Gordon still has a lot of development. I don't know if Gordon's going to ever go to MMA. I think Gordon could possibly stay in jiu-jitsu and make even more money by staying in jiu-jitsu. So he could avoid MMA, which could cause some style issues and style just adjustments for all Brazilian jiu-jitsu practitioners, world champions. They always have to make style adjustments. But also, you know, with MMA, you're looking at concussions and brain trauma. So, and wear and tear on your body. But jiu-jitsu, he could avoid all the CTE, and most jiu-jitsu practitioners cannot make the same amount of money as a UFC fighter just doing jiu-jitsu. That's why they go to MMA. But Gordon actually can make just as much money as someone fighting in the UFC. So, I'm not sure, but Gordon's rise, you know, he really got really what I think broke him out. So Gordon had, we could do real quick. I could do an episode on Gordon and Andre, and maybe for a future episode, I might do that. Just go through their careers and break down. But Gordon still had a traditional career where he, you know, worked from white belt, blue belt. He was a teenager, constantly just living in the gym, training 2 days, 3 days, 6, 7 days a week. A lot of really good Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu practitioners, when they first start, the ones that get really good, they that's a common thing. It's not uncommon to train 6 days a week, 2 or 3 times a day for Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. That's the ones that become really, really great. You know, Mendez, Cabrinha, Roger Gracie, you know, anybody that you want to put on that list. Now, they might not train at that capacity their entire career, because they, as they get older, I'm not saying that they slow down, but they actually just become smarter with their training principles, and learn how to get more more bang for their buck, so to speak. But really early in their careers, people that have that much zest where they're willing to train 6 days a week, two, three times, like overtrain, but they still love it and they're overtraining. Generally, those people get very good. That's a consistent habit of the Marcelo Garcias. I think Marcelo Garcia was training like four times a day, something just insane. Like he lived in the gym, trained four times a day. How he didn't get burned out and just tired of doing jiu-jitsu is amazing. The Meows are like that as well. But all right. Gordon had that. Gordon had the traditional. He was a teenager. He was pretty skinny dude. And I think, again, I could go on a whole, we will do a Gordon like breakdown, like some of the things I think that contributed to his success. But, him being like the teenager, skinnier build, long legs and stuff, I think really helped him. And he competed a lot, consistently. And, when you're a teenager, that's a great time to compete because you recover so quick and you don't have a mortgage yet or kids or, student loans or anything like that. That's going to take time away from you. So competing a lot and getting that strong foundation under you when you first start, just as a strong foundation. Hodger Gracie's talked about it at every belt level, just getting smashed. But that's what contributed to him being so good as a black belt is just every single belt being in the Gracie family, just getting smashed, every single belt, but training all the time. And Gordon was good. So he, from even a traditional, sense, just like when I say traditional, like a normal tournament scene, local tournaments, IBJJF or whatever, what have you. But he really, I think what popped his name up, Gordon's done a lot of things throughout his career to give his name a boost. He got really good and then he started challenging the biggest names, the best, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu practitioners, world champions, ADCC champions, started challenging them. Some of them accepted it and he beat or met in competition and beat, and some didn't accept. And then, he used that as well to get him more notoriety. Because if you pick a fight with someone who's really high stature, and you beat them, you pick somebody, and then that gives you a bump. And then if they refuse to give you a match, the media and the crowd still wonders, like, hey, why won't this guy go against this guy? And then he kept winning matches. And then EBI, I think, was a huge breakout as well because EBI is Eddie Bravo's event. Gordon, Gary, Eddie Cummins, they all got in early on those, and their style works well for submission only. If you notice, Gordon generally has longer matches, like 20 minutes, unlimited time limits. That's a good style matchup, so people can't just stall or get a takedown or a sweep or an advantage and then stall for the rest of the match. So it lends well with the DDS, Dan Hard Death Squad, jiu-jitsu style, and their implementation of leg locks and focusing on no-gi when those were two huge weaknesses and openings in Brazilian jiu-jitsu were no-gi, leg locks, and then wrestling as well. But no-gi focus and leg locks were big weaknesses or big openings for opportunities. So I'm sure Donaher saw that and also noticed that a lot of the big payouts are no-gi as well. So Gordon got really good. He started challenging the best. EBI, with it being Eddie Bravo's organization, then that automatically gave a direct link to Joe Rogan. Joe Rogan has, I think, maybe it's the biggest podcast out. I don't know if the numbers actually are or not. I hear that every so often. Something crazy. I think he gets like 70 million downloads a month or something like that of his podcast across platforms. But right. So that gave Gordon even more promotion. So if Joe Rogan starts talking about you, you're in the MMA community, jiu-jitsu community, that really, really puts you on and makes you big. So I think it's a normal thing for the younger generation always to eventually beat the older generation, and the older generation, the older champion, retires, and, you know, there's like a passing of the torch, so to speak, in tournaments. But this didn't happen in this scenario. Andre and Gordon tries to get matched with Andre, constantly tries to pester him. Andre will say that he wants a match with Gordon in ways and statements, but then will make it very difficult. And so Gordon would always say that Andre was avoiding him and not trying to have the match. The scenario that he's saying is for ADCC, you know, maybe pays out, say, $60,000 for the absolute or the super fight for one match, $60,000 for the winner. And Andre was requesting, like, you know, $1 million or something like that. So it's just out of the budget. The Sheik of Dubai that puts ADCC just on and pays all out of pocket just because he likes jiu-jitsu. Gordon was saying that he's not going to pay $1 million for a single match, jiu-jitsu match, and he says that Andre knows this, and so that's his is a accusation that Andre is dodging him. And then what Andre said, Andre will tease to it. He said, you know, if Gordon wins the absolute, then that ADCC is every 2 years, and whoever wins the absolute gets a match against the super fight champion. So the super fight champion is like the tournament champion. And if you think about like a Mortal Kombat tournament or something, there's a champion, and every 2 years whoever wins the absolute gets to challenge the champion, and for that one match, you know, there's ADCC champion single match. So that was the scenario. Gordon won the absolute. He's due the match against Andre before he was trying to. Gordon was trying to kind of shortcut it and try and challenge Andre to a match and just go ahead and get Andre to compete before that. Andre said that he has to win ADCC Absolute first. So, you know, that's a legitimate thing. He's like, hey, I'm not just going to take any challenger that challenges me on social media. But then after Gordon did win the Absolute division, that's where Andre started changing his behavior a little bit. But at the same time, Andre doesn't say no. He teases that he's going to compete with Gordon. And, you know, he'll post a picture of Gordon and him doing a stare down and say maybe they're going to compete. All right. So just that's a quick breakdown on the backstory, just where they are, who they are. Gordon does not, maybe Gordon actually does. He might have his own, gym now where he moved with Donaher and Craig Jones and all of them. I haven't been keeping up with his gym, but he's not running an association like Andre Galval is. Andre Galval's, like I said, on the tail end of his career and has a team and an association that he built up. So, a little bit different there. Gordon will have I would assume when he's Andre's age, have an association of himself. I think so. You know, normally, sorry, I got on a rant. Normally, the thing is the younger athlete beats the older athlete, and passing the torch happens. It's natural in tournaments, but this one did not happen for that reason. And yeah, I think the thing that really got Gordon after Andre the most, and Andre has posted multiple times, he'll post that he's the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu king. So he's the king of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. That's Gordon's little stick, his little nickname thing. He says he's the king of Jiu-Jitsu. And so when that's one of the first early times that I kind of saw or I'd say one of the main reasons why you could say that Gordon is going after Andre, because when he says he's the king, Gordon just says, I am, then let's have a match to see who's actually the best person in jiu-jitsu. And I think if Andre was to just say that, if he was just a retired competitor, then it would have just fizzled out and it would have been a thing. But Andre did not want to do that. So this has been going on for years and years, and there's way more to it than that. But we just got to get to it. So this has been going on for years and years, and last week, at the Flow Grappling event, I think it was, I believe it was a Who's Number One event, but it was Flow Grappling pay-per-view event, or their subscription-based event. they finally had a run-in with each other, an altercation face-to-face, and that's where Gordon got in an argument. They got in a verbal altercation, got in each other's face. Andre pushes Gordon, and then Gordon blasts him with a pretty good slap. And then the camera goes to the left. You can look up the footage. The camera goes off the target, and then you hear another loud slap. Yeah, so let's see. Let's just go through the little breakdown quick on that. So that's the scenario, what happened. So before that, when Craig Jones wins and beats Hinaldo Jr., so Craig Jones is, I guess, on Gordon Ryan's team. They're training partners. They move together. Craig Jones is a black belt under Lachlan Giles from Australia, I believe. Lachlan got third place at the last ADCC. He's a black belt under Lachlan, I believe. But Craig is likes the whole crew, the Danaher crew, and trains with them and moved with them. That's a common thing. People will go train for months or years at a time at a location if they get along with the team. So Craig Jones beat Hinaldo Jr. Hinaldo Jr. is one of Andre Goval's black belts. He submitted him with a 50-50 heel hook, inside heel hook. The Danaher Death Squad, their team, went over to shake hands with Team Atos. And I believe everybody shakes hands except for when Gordon goes to attempt to shake Andre's hand. Andre, gives him the bird or the middle finger. Give him the middle finger when Gordon tries to shake his hand. And I can understand why Andre did it, because, Gordon's insulted him for years now. So I can understand why, but this is just the timeline of what led to this. So after that, backstage, when they're walking around, that's where the camera footage picks up backstage. And, yes, I know. I know. Then a verbal altercation. They get in each other's faces. Yes, I know. Yep, we're talking about it. So they get in each other's faces. Andre pushes Gordon. Gordon then throws the slaps. And, yes. Gordon throws the slaps. And watch the video so you can see how hard the slaps are. How much power is behind them, because they're good. And then also watch. I've watched the video a lot. And what I paid attention to was Andre's reaction to it. So from Andre's body language, what I saw is he is startled, and he was not expecting Gordon to slap him. Okay, so yes, I know. So from his body language, it doesn't look like he's expecting Gordon to slap him. 1 second. So it doesn't look like Andre is expecting Gordon to slap him, and it startles him. With the second slap, he really doesn't do anything. So with that, he looks startled, and his reaction. Everybody has different reactions. Fight, flight, or freeze is a good way to think about it. Andre, you could say, was in the freeze situation. And I think that's a thing that we can learn from. The lesson is that when you're going up arguing with somebody and things are getting heated and people are angry, I would not walk up to someone and not expect them to punch me. So this is something more from, I would say, really working in bars and clubs, working security. Just understand that anytime someone is really, really angry and you get face-to-face with each other and you get chest-to-chest, don't think that the other person won't punch you, won't sucker punch you, in this situation slap you. Even among martial artists and, fighters, like there's fights all the time, but I actually see it in bars and clubs working in security. It's actually pretty frequent that people do get sucker punched, and you would think that when things are heightened like that and it's a stressful situation, that people would be on guard. But actually, one of the reactions sometimes is that people forget you know, maybe it's if you live in a nice neighborhood, or, you know, you just haven't been in a lot of street fights, or you haven't been around street fights or violence, you haven't been in you know, just an area that has street fights recently, and so you let your guard down a little bit, and you're not reacting, or you're not expecting it could happen. So that's the first thing I would say is I tell all my students all the time, if you're in a social situation and you think someone's angry enough to punch you, or they're really angry, never look away from them. Keep your eyes on them, because it's so many sucker punches that I see. I've probably seen at least 20, more than 20, and lots of them are one-punch knockouts, because lots of times the person's not expecting it, they don't see it, they look to the side, they look away, and the person sucker punches them, and they don't see it coming at all, so their body can't react. So with this scenario, I think Andre might have got caught flat-footed or on his heels psychologically, mentally, with that scenario. This is one situation, but very specific, because it's a bunch of martial artists and jiu-jitsu practitioners and MMA fighters there too. But this can also, you know, this could just happen at a gas station. Someone could get in your face in a scenario like this, and you need to have your brain turned on and sharp, and know that it's a situation, and you want to run it through your head and say, how would I react in that scenario? From that, you know, after there's the awkward video where Andre's, there's the awkward interview, post-match interview with Gordon's over there, and Andre kind of interrupts it, and Gordon says, I slapped you, and then John Donaher's kind of just observing in the middle, and Andre tells Donaher that I'm ice cold, and I think what he meant by that situation is that he's cool, he's not going to fight, he's not going to pick a fight or anything, but Gordon was very, very ready to fight in that moment. That thing is a bit awkward. I'd still say watch that. My draw from that is I think Andre still feels a little awkward in the scenario, and he was maybe trying to come to find some closure to it or settle it, because their first interaction with the slap. You know, if you get slapped, this is where I think Andre was. I think he was startled, I think he didn't expect it. I think his ego was hurt, and I think he was embarrassed. Because it happens, like, you know, if you get challenged to a fight, or somebody slaps you, or somebody sucker punches you, and I've had it happen to me. It happened to me when I first started working security, I wasn't mentally, aggressive enough. I'm naturally a pretty friendly, nice person, and when I get into a competitive mode, I'm very, very aggressive. I'm very competitive. If it's punching, then I'm very aggressive with punches. If it's takedowns and throws, very aggressive with it. And if it's you know, chokes or submissions, very aggressive with as well. But I don't like to live I don't walk around living my normal life that way. I think it's not a good way to live life. You know, you're gonna have a heart attack, or have high blood pressure, or all that good stuff. You're constantly trying to pick fights everywhere you go. So when I was young working security, I had to learn how to turn that switch on, because I was just nice. I was just friendly, just polite. I've had that happen where you feel embarrassed. You feel embarrassed when it happens. Your ego's bruised, and the answer is really just, you know, you just have to learn from it, and you have to think about the situation, but the ego will try to protect itself and come up with excuses on what happened, and sometimes the ego will actually find good little rational things that to kind of cover it up or make it not hurt so much. But I think that's why Andre went up to the awkward interview after and had the ice cold thing that he kept saying. English is not Andre's first language that he speaks, but I still think that there was a little bit of awkwardness there with the vocabulary choice and you know, just the tension too. I've seen it a lot of times, and I've had it happen to me before. It sucks if your ego's bruised and you feel embarrassed and you're startled. It's not a good feeling. So let's see. Okay, next one I'll say with this whole scenario, just another random thought is he fell right into a promotion slash political trap to Gordon. Whether Gordon planned it or not, you know, Gordon is pretty smart. He could have planned this out as a way to instigate a match with Andre or an MMA fight or, you know, whatever it is. He could have. Gordon uses his social media to draw attention and increase his pay and his income by a lot. So it could have been planned out. If not, if it wasn't planned, it fell straight into his lane where he would like it to go, and not in Andre's lane where Andre wanted it to go. So the week, this week, after that happened, like, what happened? Gordon basically did his Gordon thing. He, his normal post, he makes political posts, I believe his doctor, canceled his appointment that he had, so he, you know, posted his doctor's social media account, and, had his people go comment and stuff like that on his, doctor's personal page, you know, Gordon just did his thing. He also had political posts all week long. And then also he'll post when he argues with people on social media, whether it's direct messages or comments. So he posted that as well. Andre was just silent. Yup, almost done. Andre was silent all week. So Andre didn't post anything all week long. And then I believe on Thursday, Andre posted that he would make a public statement, and he gave the times, like three different time zones. And he did the statement in Portuguese first, and then he did the statement in English. So yeah, all week he was just silent and then made a statement on Friday. I was actually wondering if Andre was just going to just have no reaction to it, and maybe his strategy would be to dampen or lower the fire is just take the oxygen away from it and not argue with Gordon. But it'd be tough to not say anything at all if someone slapped you twice and it's been on the internet and, you know, everybody's talking trash about you. But on Friday he makes a statement. My summary on the statement is essentially Andre said that first he apologized to his students, fans, team members, stuff like that, but he got swept up in the drama and the scenario, which I can understand. That's the style that I would prefer, is to not get swept up in drama. Again, if it comes down to like needing to fight and defend yourself, or if you're competing, I think those are good times to put aggression in, turn aggression on. But the drama, if you're living it all the time, you know, I don't think it's probably not the healthiest thing to do, is constantly engage in it. I can agree with Andre on that. Andre says that he apologized to everybody for being involved. And then he says that he forgives Gordon Ryan for the slaps, and that he doesn't want to live with anger or revenge in his heart, which, again, I agree with those. I think those are good sentiments. I don't think I would I'll tell you how I would react with the scenario. But, yeah, he says that, and he lists the reasons. He says that getting an MMA fight, not an MMA fight, but a street fight could turn really bad, and it's true, it could turn bad. Things can get too heated. And he said also that there's legally, he was worried about getting arrested. I mean, if you're arguing with somebody and they palm strike you with the right hook, I'm gonna protect myself at that time. I've had that scenario, similar scenario happen. It was in a combat jiu-jitsu tournament in a match. The combat jiu-jitsu rules, you can only palm strike on the ground. You can't palm strike on your feet. And with an opponent, we were standing up, my opponent threw a palm strike, like an uppercut, as we were standing up. And I've seen him do it. I've watched his matches and tournaments before, and he had done it before in another match. So I was kind of already ready for it. He's done it before, and he's been penalized and warned for it in a separate match, in a separate tournament. And then in my match with him, he did the same thing. So when he did it, It just fired that part of my brain. This is not an accident. It's not the first time the guy's done it. He's done it before. You've seen him do it before. You've seen him be penalized and admonished for it before. So, no, okay, he's trying to be, you know, whatever. He's trying to be dirty, kind of getting a little sucker shot or a sucker punch on me. So my first react, I mean, my didn't have to think. My instant reaction is I'll throw my own right hook palm strike. And with that scenario, you know, it's a combat jiu-jitsu match, but somebody throws sucker punches me, I'm going to give a palm strike back. We're on the feet. You hit me once on the feet, I'm going to hit you once on the feet. If you end it there, it's over. You know, it's one for one, and it's that's even trade. But if it would have turned into a fight at that point, like when I say fight, just MMA fight, not just combat jiu-jitsu, it would have just been a fight. But I'm not going to have someone – I'm not going to allow someone to palm strike me when it's not part of the rule set or I haven't agreed to it. At that point, I'm defending myself. So it's not just playing a game or a tournament. That's the reason why I returned the palm strike of my match. Like I said, Andre is saying he's worried about being arrested, but after he gets hit first. So, you know, everybody has their own opinion on that scenario. But again, somebody's in your face and they blast you with the right hook, you can definitely protect yourself. I guess on Gordon's side, it's good that Gordon just didn't keep going. I guess Gordon's smart enough, even if he was mad, to realize that if he would have just thrown combinations, it would have just been blatant assault. Just for attacking Andre. So he says that, and then he ends his statement with his, you know, he gives the forgiveness to Gordon, and then lots of people thought that maybe Andre was going to give him a match ADCC or maybe an MMA fight or challenge him to a fight or a match or something, but he didn't do that at all. Again, he kind of went with the scenario. It kind of gives a little bit more credit to the. What Gordon says is that Andre doesn't want to match with him. So perhaps that's the thing, is that Andre truly doesn't want to match with Gordon. And now he's trying to just forgive and just stop, I guess. He said he doesn't like the trash talk. I don't like trash talk either. But maybe he's just trying to move on with it. And, you know, so that's the last statement that Andre put. And then he ended the thing with a promotion, which was weird. It was like a sales promotion, like a sales pitch. He promoted Autos Online. He gave a 50% off for a year membership. So I guess if you pay a year in full, you get 50% off. I don't know. That was a bit odd to me to do a promo at the end of that statement. I don't know. You know, trying to sell your online stuff and I guess make money. I don't know. Maybe he was getting a lot of views. I'm sure it probably worked though. There was a whole lot of people looking at Andre's page. Probably had a lot of people. So probably a lot of people did take it. So it was a way to make money. I guess he's just turned into a promotion since there's so much attention around it. I haven't seen, as of this moment, I haven't seen Gordon's response. I've been looking for his, but I haven't seen a real detailed breakdown. I'm sure there's going to be one that's coming. Tom DeBlast put out his Instagram story the other day, and Tom was basically saying that he thinks that they should fight in 1FC. And I would like it. If they were to fight at 1FC, I think it's a cool idea. Both of them, they're both fighters. Andre has a professional MMA background, so he has experience. Gordon trains in MMA and says that he wants to go, but yeah, they could fight. They're both fighters. That would be a controlled setting. The scenario that they have wasn't a street fight either. It's happened before, so you could go on YouTube right now and you can watch an old Pride backstage fight backstage, and it's Vanderlei Silva's Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu coach versus Charles Crazy Horse Bennett. Charles Crazy Horse Bennett, the video, he's kind of in the guy's face, like taunting him, and Vanderlei Silva's Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu coach, they get in a fight backstage, and Vanderlei's Jiu-Jitsu coach triangle chokes Charles Crazy Horse Bennett, and triangle chokes him until he goes to sleep. And because everybody there is martial artists and fighters, they actually just stop it there. Like, they choke him, goes to sleep, he's unconscious, and that's basically it. That's happened actually several times. Anyway, with the scenario that Andre was in, it's maybe one of the safest street fights that you could be in. You're surrounded by nothing but pro fighters and martial artists, and they could say, "Hey, it's mutual combat. They both chose to fight. We'll just stop it whenever it's over." Just like if there was same scenario and there was a knockout or something, they'd stop it. But which is actually kind of interesting to me. I wonder if there was a joint lock, like a heel hook, if someone was to tap in that scenario, if the person would release and stop, or would they continue and tear their knee completely? That'd be curious, because in the same scenario, there's fighters, fights among martial artists backstage, stuff like that, and the same scenario would be if someone got knocked out, the rest of the people would step in and end it, or stop the fight. But also with the Vanderlei Silva, his jiu-jitsu coach chokes out Charles Crazy Horse Bennett unconscious, and then they stop it because they're like, signifies that he won and the other guy lost. Curious if that would happen. But yeah, Tom DeBlast, saying set it up for 1FC. I think it would be cool. You got a referee there. It's not like a street fight. The fans would love it. It would be awesome for the fans. It would be actually a really cool, I would be excited. It'd be a really cool fight to watch. I'd be excited by the pay-per-view. They both would get paid really good. I mean, maybe they both get $1 million payday. Or $1 million over the career from everything, the promotion that would give them and their fight purse and then their instructionals that they would have over it. But they would both get paid. Yeah, definitely at least make $1 million off of the fight, both of them for their career going forward. It would be, it'd be the biggest jiu-jitsu-born MMA fight of all time. Two kings of two different generations fighting and all the scenario that's going on. I don't think Andre's gonna take him up on the MMA fight. I wish he would, but I don't think it's gonna happen. So my opinion on it, my opinion is, I think you can stand up for yourself and defend yourself if someone is attacking you or exercising violence and they're using their body to physically damage you. You can definitely protect yourself and defend yourself. You might have to go to court. You might have to speak with law enforcement, things like that. But that's why you want to make sure that you're always protecting yourself. You're not being punitive. You're not trying to hurt somebody because you're mad at them. But you can protect yourself if somebody's attacking you or exercising damage on your body. There's also a time not to fight. So a lot of scenarios that you shouldn't fight. my reaction, honestly, if in the same scenario, like Andre, what my reaction would be. It would be a fight. If it's that scenario, you do have to calculate all the things that are going on, the risk and things. But in that scenario, it would be a fight. It would just be my natural reaction with the people that were surrounding. Again, you're not in a bar, you're not in a club, you're not, say like you're outnumbered, like there's just one of you and there's 20 of them. That's not smart. It's like you versus a hockey team or something. No, that's not smart. But that's not the scenario that was going on. Andre's entire team's there. There's other neutral teams. There's people, there's literally referees there. Like it's all fighters. It's all martial artists. That's not a scenario where you have to think about like a knife getting pulled out or a gun getting pulled out and everybody gets shot. If you're outnumbered, you're in a professional setting, obviously you don't want to, you're not trying to fight when you're at work. You're in a professional setting, you're at a school event or something like that. There's plenty of scenarios where you're not going to fight. That is not a good time to do it. It's not appropriate. There's plenty of, or most of the time, I'd say you want to avoid conflict and avoid fights. But with this particular scenario, I would say I'm probably going to start fighting, just because I've just been struck. I've just been attacked. I haven't worked in security. I haven't had a situation where someone attacked me and I didn't defend myself. That's just autopilot. Anytime someone attacked me working security, it's automatic defense. Whether it's automatic grappling like takedowns or striking, there's no hesitation. There's no pause. Now there's been, there have been, now say early on, they're not physical, but just verbal things. There were scenarios where I wasn't assertive enough. And, that's what I say. I know how Andre feels, cause I wasn't assertive enough and I wasn't direct enough. And I didn't like how it made me feel. And I had to study and train and practice and get more experience and learn how to do it. But yeah, physical, not that scenario, all physical altercations. I can tell one, going to a party, probably still in high school or outside of high school, going to a party, and like out in the country, we would have like bonfires, like big fires, you know, and everybody's just having a party there. Going there, and I went with a friend of mine, and the friend of mine had found out about this party, and people that we knew went to the party, but I don't think we were actually invited to the party. It was maybe 50 people, 100 people. But at some point, I can't remember the scenario. I don't even actually remember talking to anyone, but, I do remember, I say not being invited to the party. It's not like a bad, like sneaking up thing. It was, we would have, the school I went to would have really large parties where everybody knew about it and everybody would show up. I can't remember actually what the situation was, but for any reason, me and my friend were outnumbered, you know, I don't know, can't remember, 10 people, 15 people, whatever, it's two of us. And there was one guy that was just spouting off like insults constantly. And we're walking back to his car. It's like, okay, look, we're just going to leave. It's not a smart thing. And we were in a situation where we were outnumbered by a large group, and we didn't have a large group of friends there. So it's like, yeah, this isn't a good time to pick a fight, So it's like, all right, let's just get out of here. If your spider sense is tingling when you're out somewhere, and it probably means you need to go, then you need to go. So it's like, all right, we'll get out of here. And the whole time walking back to the car, the guy's talking trash to me, hurling insults, stuff like that. And I remember my friend got mad. He had the Andre feeling. His pride was hurt. And he was mad, and he told me, he's like, dude, we should have fought those guys. We could beat them up. And the actual guys that were doing it would not have been a problem. I know who the people are. It would not have been a big issue. But then I remember telling him, like, hey, did you see the guy, you know, 5 feet behind him with the aluminum baseball bat? And he's like, no, I didn't see that. And I was like, see, yeah. Well, I saw the guy behind him. So a guy was talking trash to me, you know, saying everything that you could say. And then right behind him, this guy with an aluminum baseball bat. It's like, all right, even if I punch you and get on top of you and start throwing punches or, you know, knock you out, whatever, it's like this guy with his aluminum baseball bat's going to hit me in the back of the head when I'm engaged with you. So, you know, there's plenty of scenarios that fighting is not the correct thing to do. But if you're forced to it, if your back's to a wall and you have no option, I do think you should be able to defend yourself. Next one on my opinion is sometimes Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu schools lose their bite. So it's one of the reasons why we are an MMA gym. So we're Phoenix MMA. It's one reason why we have, again, we got Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, wrestling, boxing, Muay Thai, kickboxing. Sometimes Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu schools can lose their bite, especially if they're all gi schools. It happens a lot because they just get super sporty Jiu-Jitsu. And generally, MMA gyms and Jiu-Jitsu gyms are really nice, like cool people, really polite people. But when it gets super, super hyper gi sporty, sometimes you'll, because you have so many cool, nice people that are getting all their aggression out and they're getting great workouts and they found something they really love to do, sometimes they can lose the bite and they can lose their little roughness, like toughness to them. That happens with, most of the time it happens with gi Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu gyms. I think every once in a while, you know, even if you don't want to compete in boxing or your focus is Jiu-Jitsu, I think every once in a while taking a boxing or the Muay Thai kickboxing class is good for you. And taking a punch or throwing a punch is good for you every so often, just to keep your edge and keep your sharpness. It's also what I like about wrestling and I like about no-gi as well. But I think that might be part of Andre's reaction just from training and habit. I think if Andre was still in his physical prime, like say in his prime, and it's not a physical prime thing, I'm not saying he's too old to have a reaction and defend himself. I think if he was, when he was still in MMA competition, you would have seen a different reaction, because if he was training, sparring and striking, he probably would have just autopilot, could have thrown like a 3-punch combination, just autopilot. Yeah, that'll happen sometimes. Just a little side note. That's why we're an MMA gym. MMA gyms they do have more edge. They do have more bite to them, and they can go the wrong way, and they can become bad. But you have to guide the culture and the training program with good, smart coaching, and also everybody has to work really hard and be tough. So you have to guide it with good coaching. Say like what we want to provide, like as a service, what we want to provide as a service for the gym is that, there's a lot of things that we're providing with everything that we teach. There's a lot of levels of life lessons and fitness and fun hobby. But one of the things that we do want to provide is that, you should feel more confident, in your self-defense and your ability to protect yourself. That's one of the major reasons. That's one of our major, goals for the gym. So we do want to, that is, our plans with the gym. So it's one of the reasons why we're an MMA gym and not just a strict Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu gym and not just a strict gi competition Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu gym. Just my two cents on that and my thought process for the gym. Let's see. Please don't take this the wrong way. And, if somebody gets in an argument with you, you blast them with 3-punch combination and double leg mount them and then an arm triangle. I'm not telling you to do that. So, I'm just telling you my perspective on my scenario of what I would do in the scenario, but I'm also giving, hopefully you everybody heard the part where I was saying, there are tons of smart times where it is not a smart thing to engage in a fight. I'd say, way before that, I think if Andre, maybe if he could look back in time, Andre would have, gone back in time and just not engaged in all this. It was actually Enzo Gracie's book called, Mastering Jiu-Jitsu. And it might even be written with John Donaher, but one of the chapters is about violence and different types of fights. And says the most common fight in public situations, bars, clubs, things like that, are ego fights. And essentially what happens, and man, if John Donaher wrote this, I got to look back. I read this book when I was a long time ago in high school, I read it. The breakdown on it, says with the ego fights is that someone's ego or pride is hurt, is damaged. And with an insult or, whatever type of reaction or thing that occurs. And then that causes the person to have a reaction that then also that then attacks that person, the transgressor's ego. And then they respond with their own attack. And that basically it's tit for tat all the way until there's a physical fight. And, somebody goes to level one, next person goes to level two, level three, level four, level five, left and right, back and forth, until eventually it leads to violence. And the tip in that book, it's called Mastering Jiu-Jitsu. The tip that they give is that you want to short circuit, the altercation that's going on, and you want to take yourself away from it. So instead of engaging in the ego battle, back and forth, until you eventually get to a physical altercation, you can always pull yourself out of it. And I think that's probably good advice. I'm going to go look at that book to see who the author is again, but I know Enzo Gracie is an author of it. He's one of the authors on the book. So maybe Andre would have done that if he could go back. The other thing I'll say with this is you should, from training and maturing and dealing with scenarios that could have violence, you do want to learn how to control your eyes and how to make eye contact, and you do want to learn how to be assertive and be able to use your words and speak in a way that if someone was to try to intimidate you or size you up or prepare to attack you, lots of times a fear reaction is, animals will do this too, you know, dogs will do it, stuff like that. They'll offer up, you know, their neck, or they'll turn to the side as a submissive stance. Like, hey, don't look, I'm not a challenge, don't mess with me. But you do that. That's a normal human nature thing, or say human nature. It's a normal animal instinct. But I would say there, you do want to train how to use your eyes, your words, and not that submissive stance and turn. Bad people will use it as an opportunity to rob you, sucker punch you, stab you, if you're in a really bad scenario. So I would advise against that. Given the submissive, or, you know, and people will sometimes say, like, well, I expect the best in everybody. And that is one way, again, the ego will say it. Or maybe somebody's just extremely naive, but there's a lot of people that will say that. And they're not actually naive. They're just scared of the scenario. And it's a submissive thing, a posture. Just so you know, like, there's plenty of people that fight. There are fighters that are scared going into a fight. There's world champions that are scared. Scared is not the word. They have fear, like fear. How you get brave is you have fear and you're scared of stuff, and then you face it anyway. And then your bravery and your ability of how much fear you can handle increases. Just like being able to lift weights. But you have to still act when you're scared. When you feel fear, you still have to act anyway, and you have to exercise bravery to become more brave. But yeah, you definitely want to have, for the most part, if you have that, you can stop a lot of situations. If you notice someone sizing you up, if somebody's testing you, if somebody's trying to intimidate you, and you address it, you go really quick. Something to think about is predators look for prey. So predators look for prey animals, and they, you know, so if you show you're submissive, to someone who is a predator, they're more likely actually to attack. But when you show them, like, I'm not the one, with your eyes, your posture, your verbal communication, your nonverbal communication, oftentimes, they will, not mess with you. They'll go to a different situation, different scenario. So I think you should practice being able to turn that on, and that's going to work a lot, but you don't want to walk around like that all the time. I think normal life, it's way better to just be friendly and nice to people and you know, give everybody an honest chance. And if you notice that they're doing that, be able to turn it on. And you know, again, this is for if somebody's doing something serious or they're trying to intimidate you or something like that, but you know, for like minor transgressions or little mistakes or something, no, I think you should be pretty chill and understanding of what's going on, because lots of times minor transgressions, if someone says something like offensive or does something kind of offensive, or you know, most little things are just ignorance, or you know, people don't even realize that they did it, like nervous tics and things. So the minor things, you know, you kind of let go. You know, otherwise you'll just be too OCD about how everybody's acting with you, and you'll be hostile and defensive against everybody. But, yeah, that's my take on it. I guess in summary, I think I would have reacted if somebody slaps me in that particular case, like location scenario, there's probably a fight. There's also smart reasons not to fight. I really wish that they would just schedule an MMA fight. They can take my money. I will get the pay-per-view. We'll stay tuned to see what happens next, because I'm pretty sure the Andre Goval, Gordon Ryan saga is not over. So, to be continued. And hopefully you enjoyed this episode and thought it was entertaining, or there was something that you got from it. Yeah, check out Mastering Jiu-Jitsu. Enzo Gracie's one of the authors. It's actually a really good one. And the violence chapter, they even talk about assassinations. So it's kind of a, it's a cool book because it's not just like jujitsu, like chokes. There's tactics and things in the book too. It's really interesting. Hopefully you enjoyed this episode, and yeah, gonna go watch the UFC now and take notes. So you see you, everybody. Bye.